Welcome back to Buzzardry. It is April 15th, just before 5:30 p.m. here on a Monday. I'm Patrick McGee, and I am glad to be joined by Jacob Fazero and Jonathan Brent. How are you guys doing?
A little better than Sunday, or Saturday, I guess.
Indeed.
Yeah, so we'll get right into it. Golden Eagles go 2-2 over the week, beating Southeast Louisiana 5-1 in the midweek game, but then losing 18-8, 19-8, then winning 14-9 on Sunday to salvage a game in the Georgia State Series. But losing 2 out of 3, obviously the big story, pitching really struggling over the weekend, giving up the most runs Georgia State has ever had in a Sun Belt weekend series. They actually had broke that record through 2 games, 25 combined home runs for both teams. 13 for USM, 12 for Georgia State. So, you know, small ballpark, windy in Atlanta, evidently, and made for a, you know, really bad weekend on the mound. Hit it, you know, pretty well. But, again, the mound performances was just, you know, bad enough to where you're only able to get 1 game. But I guess what was y'all's thoughts on this last weekend in Atlanta?
Goodness, yeah. It just feels like an – statistical anomaly every way you spin it, whether you were felt like you were watching a game at Coors Field or a backyard baseball game or the Bigs, that old video game where every hit's a home run. I mean, that was some weird weird weather, small ballpark. For those that watched the Masters this weekend, I guess that was enough proof to validate that the win was real, because I don't know that we knew anyone at that game. There was only about 200 at each game to verify that for us. But yeah, I mean, anytime the offense averages less than 10 runs a game than the opponent, you'd think you could point a finger at the offense. But, I mean, no matter how they swung it, you weren't going to win games 1 and 2 with the way we threw it. I mean, your starters, I think, had a 27 ERA for the weekend. I just heard that number. So, yeah, historically bad on the mound. But shout out to Carl Sibley in the offense for, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say, a season salvaging win yesterday when you were down 5 at one point.
Yeah, I landed in the Atlanta airport Thursday late at night, and we had to make multiple attempts to get on the ground. So the wind was for real, kind of scary there for a second. But yeah, look, you look at a weekend like this, and I know week after week we've been trying to put our thumb on like the consistent issues, right? Hey, what can we say is a consistent issue, and you know, shockingly, we're looking at starting pitching. For the weekend in particular, and it's just like, what's going to be our surprise for you know, a major issue next weekend? It's like drawing something out of a hat. So you know, head scratching to finally be able to score, you know, 8 runs in those first pair of games and lose as badly as we did. So, you know, it was good to even up the series with Southeastern at home on what was that, Tuesday?
Yes.
Whatever day that was. And, you know, a lot of, hopefully the teams did a lot of soul searching over the weekend. I know that, that bounce back game, like you mentioned, Cross Sibley's performance was fantastic, coming back on Sunday, but, definitely a head scratcher to see the starting pitching happen the way they did. And the weirdest part is it wasn't just one guy, right? It wasn't just like, oh, well, Mazza had an awful game, you know, happenstance thing, and then Billy and Will were on top of it Saturday, Sunday. It was all three of them, and all kind of head scratching. So, you know, not much more to say there.
Yeah, I mean now you look at like the conference pitching statistics. So, Golden Eagles now have a 6.66 ERA in conference play for the year. That's pretty perfect right there. With a 1.57 whip. And then, but if you look at just like it individually, Mazza above a 10 ERA now, above a 2 whip, Oldham up above, or at, just right at almost a 5 ERA, 124 whip in league play. Again, these are all league play statistics. Armistead, 573 ERA, 136 whip. So again, it is kind of a whack-a-mole in terms of the strengths and weaknesses from week to week. I mean, starting pitching was, you know, probably one of the strengths of this team early on. And now, you know, there's really these last 2 weekends, they've been a weakness where you didn't get any good starts from any of your starters. this weekend and last week. You only got, you know, really one with Oldham. And then, yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, Colby Allen, you know, had a really poor outing out of the bullpen that kind of used him and see if, well, he, you know, maybe can he put out the fire there on Saturday. He got hit hard. I mean, yeah, again, and Sibley, you know, like Jonathan was saying, was really the only guy that was able to you know, keep them from scoring bunches of runs. Him and Josh Ott, give credit to Josh Ott for throwing a good inning there on Friday. Throwing just one scoreless inning, but, you know, he was, you know, really the only guy that could keep them from doing much on Friday. But, yeah, just it's hard to, again, kind of like Fitz was saying, you know, hard to put your finger on what the issue is. You know, starting pitching this week, you know, who knows, this upcoming weekend, it might be the bullpen, it might be the hitting again. But it's just kind of the general inconsistency of this team where, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, the team I think is still a decent enough team at this point, you know, 22-14. 9-6 in the league. But again, you just haven't got any consistent performances in all three phases, whether that's, you know, hitting, starting pitching, or bullpen. Really, I mean, I guess you kind of look that first Louisiana Tech, or the first game of the Louisiana Tech, maybe that was kind of, you would say, the peak of what this team has shown. And, you know, maybe an individual game here or there, like the game against Troy, the first 8 innings against Alabama. But just haven't been consistent enough across the board in, you know, the various areas of the game to, you know, be a great team yet. Right now you're just kind of, you know, decently mediocre, I think would be the right wording. So you guys have any thoughts on that? Or
yeah, and we mentioned that starting pitching hasn't really been the concern when we do these reviews of the week each podcast, and I think this weekend just showed how much pressure we put on starting pitching and pitching as a whole. You don't have a 2016, 2017, 2018 offense that can win you a track meet. At times they may be able to, but that you haven't seen that explosive consistency yet. And the coaches, the first ones to say that, Curl said on Eagle Hour last week that they're doing some good things. They're just not touching home plate enough, and didn't touch home plate enough the first two games either, but we know what the opponent was doing. But yeah, you said it, you got to fire on all three phases, and we haven't done that enough. Yeah, I guess offensively, historically good week for the bats. Season wise, we had at least six, and if you count the catchers as one person, seven lineup regulars with 1,000 plus OPS, leading the way with Gillespie, hitting 600 with multiple bombs. I believe that the home runs and ribbies aren't broken out here, just the three, what's it called, the three stack
slash line.
Thank you. Russo hit 455 with a 1,318 OPS, and with, it looks like, Butler's apparent injury, we may be calling on him a little more frequently in the days to come. They called it a groin injury for Butler. He didn't play Tuesday and came out of the game pretty early. I guess it was Saturday. So, yeah, great good weekend for Russo with his first two bombs, I believe, as a Golden Eagle. McIntyre hit 400 with an 1,170 OPS. Pato, 350, the 1,250 OPS. Ozzie Pratt hit over 300. Buster hit over 300 with 1,000 OPS. Nolan Tucker hit over 300, getting his first few hits, including a big double on Tuesday night in the midweek. He's a guy with that injury again. You could see at second base, or maybe him broadest rotate, and depending on the handedness of the pitcher. And the catcher's had 1,286 OPS. Good week for Stockman, and then Wilkes again with a 1,063 OPS and multiple home runs. So good from the offense, but is it bad of me to say it would be good when you think of the conditions?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, you have to grade. We kind of talk about this week being a statistical anomaly because of the field, and so the field. The if you look on like Wikipedia, it says the dimensions are like maybe 385 to center, 336 to the foul poles. But somebody on Eagle Post posted it, and or just because on Google Maps you can go on there and do the measure distance tool, and it's actually the real distance is 315. To the poles and like 340 to the gaps and 375 to center field. So it is very much a hitter's ballpark. I mean, obviously Georgia State has not put up that kind of run production all year. So, I mean, you do certainly have to say that. It's not like they're scoring, you know, 15, 20 runs every weekend, but it is a hitter's park, friendly conditions for hitters with the win. But yeah, again, yeah, I mean, in the same way you have to grade on a curve for pitching and you say, oh, maybe you give them a little bit of a pass because of the park and, the conditions. But you also have to, you know, do that disclaimer on the opposite side for hitters. Like, well, you know, they hit in those same conditions. And even though they had, you know, probably the best hitting performance of the year. I think the previous series high of home runs in a weekend series was 6 against Louisiana Tech, hit 13 this weekend. But, yeah, again, you have to grade on that same curve that you grade the pitchers on.
Not to be the home run quantifier guy, but 8 of your first 10 this weekend were all solos. And it wasn't until you hit the 3-2 run shots yesterday that you came into a victorious game. So, again, it seems like we're coming up empty when we leave the yard when it happens.
Yeah, it was good to get those, you know, a couple of those, you know, extra bit or the multi RBI home runs yesterday, kind of break that open. I guess there's not a whole lot we have left to say on. We'll kind of get back onto it when we have a couple more questions about it. But just, hope this is an anomaly for the pitching staff. And again, we'll see if they do any kind of shakeups. I mean, you know, you didn't get any good starts from any of your three guys. So, I don't know if you shake any of that up because all three of them had kind of equally bad performances. I mean, you know, do you move Mazza back? Do you move Mazza out? Do you move Sibley in? I don't know. But, I mean, you're going to have to get better starting pitching, obviously, because you can't have a Friday guy, you know, with a 10 ERA in league play, or Saturday and Sunday guys that, you know, have ERAs in the 5-6 range. You got to get that down just a little bit, at the least, you know, you want to have, I think, you know, a weekend ERA probably of in that, you know, around 4.5, I think is reasonable. I mean, I guess we've kind of been spoiled over the years with Ostrander. He's probably been lower than that, if you go back. But I think, you know, if you try to get in that 4.5 range 4.50, I guess is what I'm trying to say, for weekend starting pitching and league play, I think that's what you would take. So, but any more thoughts on this weekend of baseball?
Yeah, I guess to bring the attention to the outside of the weekend, I thought the pitching staff did a great job on Tuesday night. We both each had 11 hits, I believe. Yeah, 11 hits for us, 11 hits for Southeastern, and the pitching staff left 12 straight on the bag. Good start for Druckenmiller. That was encouraging to see a new name have some consistency, and I believe he's been announced the starter for tomorrow night against Nichols. Beth had another good outing, and Sibley, again, that covering 3 2/3 scoreless to bring it home. I thought that Tuesday was a well-played baseball game for us, even though it seems like a year ago for how long this weekend seemed like it went by.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the length of that start's going to look like for tomorrow night against Nichols, but, like you mentioned before, not sure if there's going to be a shakeup in the weekend or not, but, with the bullpen seeming to be a little thin after injury and things like that, we got some pretty important games coming up, so going to be interesting to see.
And I believe Middleton didn't throw a pitch this weekend. Druckenmiller didn't. I don't think Boswell threw a ton. Best only got through to one hitter. Am I right?
Yes, but you got the last out on Sunday.
Yeah, you've got a lot of arms that, even though I guess you only played 18 innings the first two games, or 14 innings the first two games, but you've got a lot of arms that didn't throw a pitch this weekend. So Oz has kind of got a clean slate to work with as far as the guys he throws those first 5 or 6 of the weekend or of the midweek game that we've seen these last few. So I'm curious to see how he plays it out.
Okay. Yeah. So Sibley 45 on Tuesday, 89 on Sunday. So that would be close to 100 or 130 or 135 pitches, I guess, or 140, close to 140 pitches. So yeah, you just hope that he didn't wear down by the end of the year. But he that was kind of the story last year where he got off to a really good start. And then by kind of toward the end of last year, kind of struggled some, but then, you know, he kind of, he had some stronger starts in the regional. We were pitching pretty well against Samford in the regional, and then, you know, keeping that game two against Tennessee within reach as well. So, but yeah, you want him to be at full strength down the stretch. So,
yeah, I think it's safe to say that he'll be down tomorrow night, and I would hope that's what happens, and I think that's the correct decision. But props to him for, I guess it was 10 or 11 innings of sub 3 ERA baseball when you're playing in a little league, Coors Field with little league dimensions.
Yeah, so moving into this upcoming week, Tuesday, Nichols State at home. They are 24-13, 7-5. Obviously, they beat USM and Biloxi earlier in the season. But you kind of look at their resume, they are 98 RPI, 140 in Massey. And yeah, I mean, don't know who they're going to start. They, I mean, you'll probably see a ton of guys. The guy that started last week, a guy named Hayden Luke, almost 11 ERA, almost 2 WHIP. But I mean, you're going to see a whole lot of different guys, I would guess, from both teams, with it being a midweek game. You know, they hit it pretty well, 906 OPS. Edgar Alvarez, he has a 444 average. That has to be toward the top in the country. 1301 OPS, 8 home runs. Garrett Felix, 931 OPS. So yeah, I mean, but yeah, Alvarez with a 441 batting average. I'm gonna have to where that stacks up nationally. That has to be almost at the top. Okay, yeah, that so he is Alvarez is tied for 5th in the country in batting average. There's actually a guy for Arkansas Pine Bluff that has a 505 batting average.
I was about to ask you what the first place was at. My word.
His name is Edwin De La Cruz. I wonder if he's related to Ellie De La Cruz. I don't know if his brother plays for Arkansas Powell, but then you have Charlie Condon for Georgia, who's having a tremendous season with 482. Travis Banzana, who could be the number one pick for Oregon State, 455. And then Ben Miller, Duke, 452. But yeah, 444 batting average. Again, a 1301 OPS. So he's the guy really makes them go. And he's a senior, so yeah, if he was like a freshman or a sophomore, I'd be like, well, he's heading to Baton Rouge next year. But no, this is the last year. But yeah, he's having a great year for him. But yeah, again, like Brent said earlier, Druckenmiller getting the start, so hopefully, you know, you get 3 innings from him. I think that'd be a positive. But any thoughts on Nichols heading into this week?
It looks like they've been kind of up and down. You know, they swept Southeastern and then turn around and got swept by – or sorry – lost series in Northwestern State, 1-2. So, you know, we've seen them, saw them in Biloxi. That game went 10 innings, and we really, really tried to scratch back and to take that one, but weren't able to. So, it's a good ball team. They're like 24-13 or something like that. So they're winning games, including one against us. So I don't think it's something that we should take lightly. It's sure to be an exciting game.
Yeah, about the same quality of club we've seen the last few midweeks. They're 3-3 against our other midweek opponents they share a conference with in UNO and Southeastern. We've already seen what can happen when our offense comes out slow or paper cutty at the end. I remember that being the theme of that game at MGM. When we came back, it was just one RBI every play. No explosive hits, no balls in the gap. If they were a home run, it was a solo. So need no freebies from the pitching staff and need early and often offense, just like we will for a lot of these games down the stretch.
So, yeah, ULM 17-18, 5-10 in the league. And, you know, this is an improved team. I mean, I'm not saying they're great or anything, but I think you look at them last year, they went 17-37 last year. They've already won 17 games this year. They were sub-200 in Massey a year ago. They're up to 146 in Massey this year, 154 RPI. So, again, not a great team, probably going to struggle to make the conference tournament. But they are much improved from a year ago. And I think you look at the rotation. They really only have 2 set starters, and neither of them are throwing a bunch of innings. They're kind of playing musical chairs there on Sunday. But Cam Barlow and Bo Blanchard are going to be the 2 guys. I think you're going to see Friday, Saturday. Barlow, he's a lefty. But again, you know, he's a lefty. They can get the ball across the plate. And we've seen those guys give US some trouble. So he only has 8 walks. 31 2/3 inning, 32 strikeouts, 5.12 ERA, but a 1.11 WHIP, which is solid. And then the Bo Blanchard, he's a big righty, can apparently throw pretty hard. He's a transfer from UNO, 6.39 ERA, 1.42 WHIP, 11 walks, 26 Ks, and 31 innings. And then again, you know, not sure who they're going to go with in that Sunday role. I know Chipper Menard is the guy. He's a transfer. They came in from ULL a couple years ago. He's another lefty that they relied on. He's the guy you could see out of the bullpen. Justin Robinson is another guy. He's actually a local product from Pearl River Central, who's actually like a top 5 or 6 player in the state of Mississippi when he came out of high school. I was surprised ULM was able to get him, but he's thrown 21 innings, 13 Ks, 13 walks, 26 Ks. And then I guess their closer, their ace reliever, Parker Say, 3.32 ERA, 1.05 WHIP, 6 strikeouts, 29 – I'm getting my walk-to-strikeout ratio mixed up today. 6 walks, 29 strikeouts, and 19 innings, so good K or 9. And then you look at their hitting numbers, 828 OPS as a team. In league play, that number is 708. So, I mean, they did kind of feast on some weak non. And they played three games against Alabama A&M, so that's skewing those numbers just a tad. They were able to put up some big numbers in that weekend series. But Easton Winfield, 1041 OPS, 8 home runs. Bryce Blazer, 941 OPS, 2 home runs. 905 OPS for Colby Lunsford, 3 home runs. I guess if you look at it in league play, because, again, those three games against Alabama A&M do skew those numbers. You look at Matt Abshire leading them at OPS with 855 OPS. Again, 2 home runs in league play for him. So yeah, I mean, a lot of these numbers go down once you take out kind of the fluff and non-con. But again, this is an improved team. Again, they've already matched their win total from last year, making big strides in RPI and Massey. But this is kind of one of the series that I think we singled out for most of the year is should be a sweep, especially with it being at home. So any thoughts on the Warhawks? The Fighting Ben Milams heading in to this weekend.
Yeah, I don't think we can look at a record and assume we're going to either win or sweep. I think we tried to do that this past weekend, but we saw what happened. So they're just coming off a sweep of Texas State. Not a sweep. Maybe not. It's just a series win. They lost that Sunday game, but. Look, just like everybody else, they're going to be here or they're going to be prepared to play. Should be a good weekend in Hattiesburg. I plan to be there most of the weekend. So, I don't know what it's going to look like. Hopefully starting pitching can bounce back and, prove that they belong where they are and we can see that. But I don't expect it to be easy.
Yeah, this will be the first series of the Pete I'll get to take in this weekend too. I'll be in town, excited about that. But yeah, I think that if this weekend exposed one thing on a game by game basis, it was the pitching depth of this game. Exposed one thing on your schedule basis, it was that you really wish you wouldn't have been 2 out of 3 in teams to death, and you need those you need one or two of those extra third wins big time for your resume now. So. With last weekend's performance, this definitely has turned into a must sweep, but this is a much harder sweep than last year's ULM team will be. Like you said, Pat, their numbers are better. Their stats are better. It looks like they haven't really left a yard a ton in conference play. They've hit 6 home runs and given up 15. So hopefully we can use the long ball a little bit. But if you look at their schedule, I would think they played the hardest conference schedule to date so far, and they've got their easier stretch behind us. Their conference series have been – Troy, Georgia State, Coastal, UL, Texas State, and LS gauntlet to open the conference slate. And like you said, they've already matched their win total with that slate. So, as much as we want it to be a must sweep on paper, we're going to have to play real, much better baseball than we did last year. Did we sweep them last year at their place?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to have to play much better baseball than the baseball we had down there last year with a sweep.
Yeah, and just looking at their lineup, so because it was kind of interesting, Georgia State had actually hit righties a lot worse than they hit lefties, but they dominated all of the righties we threw at them. But then the only guy that was really able to give them any kind of trouble was the lefty and Sibley. But just looking at ULM's the most recent lineup they put out there, there were three lefties and a switch hitter, so pretty balanced lineup in terms of handedness. Again, we've talked about that, prefer a righty heavy lineup just because USM throws out 3 righties on the weekend. But yeah, ULM in town this weekend. And again, big for RPI. I mean, this would be, RPI landmines as we like to talk about. We can probably talk about that, I guess, the resume, because I don't think we got any questions about that. But USM right now, obviously 22-14, 9-6 in the league, 3-2 quad one, 10-9 quad one and quad two. 28 non-conference strength of schedule, 52 overall strength of schedule. You look at the needs report. Needs report is saying to get in the top 45. USM probably needs to get to this 14 wins as of yesterday. So then you get 13. It's saying 35, I guess 35 and 19 to get in the top 45. And I'm kind of on the – I still think a top 40 RPI and 20 and 10 in the league. We'll get it done, and let's say you go 3-1 in your midweek. So that would be I guess that would be 11-4 the rest of the way in league play. So let's say you go 3-3 against Coastal and ULL, and then you sweep ULM and Arkansas State, and let's say you take 2-3 against Texas State. You go again, go 3-1 in the midweek. So that would be 14 and 5. So that would mean 36 and 19, 20. There's a 55 game season. So 36 and 19, 20 and 10 in the league. I think that gets you in. ULL and Troy both got in at 18 and 12 a year ago. But you go back to Coastal in 2022. I mean, they were one of the last teams that they went 21-8-1. So, I mean, that was pre-realignment, though. So, it does change year by year, but I still think 20 wins is kind of that magic number to get in. But do you guys have any thoughts on, I guess, just the postseason picture part of it?
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it, but those wins have to be in the right places. A loss to Arky State or a couple to ULM or one to any, one out of any of six can be tough to come back from. So, definitely need to win the ones that you should. Need another Marist or potential Marshall loss on the schedule. But, yeah, a lot less room for error than what we're accustomed to this time of year.
Okay, yeah, so South won, or just going through the Sun Belt, South went 2-3 against Arkansas, or 1-2 against Arkansas State this weekend at home. ODU won 2-3 against JMU. JMU still has a pretty good RPI, but 7-8 in the league, that would kind of be disqualifying in terms of at-large. Potential Troy swept App State. Is that right? Or was that 2-3? They won 2-3. Troy won 2-3 at App State. ULL 14-1 now in the league, sweeping Marshall. So yeah, they're up to number 14 in the polls now. Again, they're going to get into the meat of their schedule. They play at Coastal, which we'll get into. Coastal wins at 2-3 Georgia Southern. They run roll that on Sunday. And then ULM, as we talked about, they won 2-3 against Texas State. And then you're really starting to get into some very important weekend series here in the league. So the big one, ULL at Coastal. Those are both top 20 teams in the latest D1 poll. That's going to have big regular season implications, or regular season title implications potentially, even though ULL does have that 5-game lead. But I think you can start seeing that maybe chip away a little bit just because of the slate they play down the stretch. Georgia Southern goes to JMU. ODU goes to Marshall. App goes to Arkansas State, Georgia State goes to Troy, and South goes to Texas State. But yeah, these next 3 weekends, the three teams I think that with real at-large potential, ULL, USM, and Coastal all play each other. So this weekend you have ULL again at Coastal. The next week you have USM at ULL, and then the week after that Coastal comes to Hattiesburg. So you're going to see the regular season, I think, really be decided. I think obviously ULL certainly has the advantage being 5 games up with 15 to play, but they do play a tougher, much tougher back half than they play their first half. So there's still a chance, I think, for Coastal and USM to catch ULL. But any, I guess, thoughts on, you know, the Sun Belt as a whole this week, last week, and going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's deep of a league in the conference that I can remember Southern Miss baseball ever playing it. Still got 10 RPI, top 100 teams, and you thought Texas State may be your 11th there, but losing 2-3 to ULM last weekend kind of nipped that in the bud, I should say. And currently you have a 5-way tie for second place that Southern Miss is a part of. You have the tiebreaker over Troy, but you don't have it over Georgia Southern and Georgia State because we ain't playing in the state of Georgia this year. Yeah, it's a log jam, and gonna, like you said, next weekends you're gonna probably see some separation and maybe some regression to the mean for UL, and you'll get to see how fraudulent or truthful Coastal is. Have maintained their ranking all year, but it seems like they're 2-3 in teams of that too, just like we are. So exciting to see, and I hope that the RPI can stay fourth in the country and maybe nab 2, 3, or 4 at large bids.
Yeah, we'll say about Coastal, they are actually the leading the league in Massey, top 25 in Massey, just because they have a bunch of big wins in terms of run differential. I mean, you know, that a lot of 10-run rule wins, so that's kind of helping their and the more margin of victory-based metrics, just because of the they're beating – when they beat teams, a lot of times it is by a lot, which, you know, factors into the Massey and the Diamond Sports ratings and, the KPI and all these other different metrics that to factor in that. So
yeah, it must be nice. Fitz, you got anything on the conference?
Nope. I mean, it's it seems like they, you know, saved a lot of fun for the latter half here. And I can't wait to see how it plays out.
Yeah, this is the time of the year on my ESPN Plus. Once our game's over, I check and see kind of what important Sun Belt game's going on and watch the remainder of that if I'm on the couch. So it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Ready for questions?
Yep.
All righty. We will start with Kyle from Midtown. Got a two-part for us today. His first one is this just a rebuilding year or are our expectations just too high?
Both.
I think both. I don't know if the expectations are too high. I think it's just, you know, there was a lot of roster turnover. Last year had a, you know, very experienced old team. And this year, again, we've tried to talk about that this team isn't necessarily young, but it is an experience where you're turning over, you know, a bunch of players that haven't, and then, you know, bringing in our guys that have been inserted in roles and they don't have a ton of experience. So I do think this is just, you know, is, you know, part of it, I think, you know, but I think the expectation still, you know, is, you know, you want to be in the contention to host every year, and that's not going to happen this year, but, you know, at least put yourself in a position where you can get a, you know, an at large and, you know, put yourself in that field of 64 and, you know, who knows what can happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could, both things can be at the same time, but I guess, you know, the other side of that coin is when you're Southern Miss and a low resource conference and you're one of the last 16 teams remaining 2 years in a row on your home field, I think you have the right to expect a little more impact from a transfer or a red shirt. But again, when you turn over half your roster, a lot of things have to go right to maintain that. So I agree. I think it's a little bit of both, but it's a frustrating year, but I'm glad our fan base is frustrated because that means we've grown to expect more for this team. And that can't be said for many other teams on our campus. And next, a non-baseball question. Kyle asks, what would be your go-to Masters meal? He says, editor's note, be sure to look up the menu beforehand to be prepared.
So is he talking about like what we would eat as patrons from the concessions or like what our club
champions? I think the champions dinner is what he means.
Oh, we've got two different.
No, he said menu, or we can do both. That's a good, that's also a question. I think his use of the word menu here states that I would think concessions.
Oh, okay.
But we could do champion dinner. We can save champion dinner for next week. I don't care.
Oh, let's do both. Go to Masters, concession item and dinner.
I'll go ahead and do concession item because if y'all are thinking about the dinner, because I'm going to need, I'll get my concession item out and then think about my dinner. but my pickiness will be exposed here. I'm not a fan of pimento cheese.
Yeah.
Not a fan of the egg salad. So I've heard good things about the barbecue sandwich. I would probably go barbecue sandwich. That's only about $2 to $3, by the way, which everything is the Masters, which is awesome. And I've always wanted to try the Georgia peach ice cream sandwich. So those would be my two cornerstones of the meal.
I've gotten very good reports on the ice cream sandwich from this really? Past week. So that would definitely be close to the top of the list. So I'll say this, I'm not a pimento cheese guy, and I never have been, much to my mother's dismay, but I ordered the Taste of the Masters kit and had a few folks over Saturday, and the pimento cheese was awesome. So I'll pivot, whereas before Saturday probably would not have said the pimento cheese, but I'm officially on the Masters pimento cheese train, so.
Yeah, dang, for me,
we had people over this weekend too. Or go ahead. Sorry.
No. Say what you were gonna say.
I said we had people over this weekend too and balked at getting the Taste of the Masters. But the fact that it tastes well even with traveled is inspiring.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So staying under $10, I would try the barbecue sandwich, and then like a Coke Zero. I guess they have that. I'm sure they have all the Coke there or all the Coke flavors there because. It's right there by Atlanta, so I'm sure they have some kind of sponsorship with Coca-Cola. So that's $5. And then chips and then a cookie. So that would be, I think, $9. So, yeah, if you get that at, you know, any other – if you get that, like, at any other golf tournament, that's probably, like, $30 at least between all that.
More, I would think.
Yeah. And yeah,
they've actually gone with a bunch of the majors where they moved the. I know the PGA Championship has where every ticket is all you can eat, all you can drink, and where it's just kind of like pay a little more for your ticket, walk in and grab and go. I went 22, I guess, whenever it was in Southern Hills in Tulsa, and we ate a lot of the value of our ticket for sure.
Yeah,
I'd be interested to try the Crow's Nest beer, which is I guess has a lot of lore behind it. No one really knows where it's brewed and where it comes from, but it's a light, refreshing lager from what I hear. So
never even heard of that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it's Masters exclusive, so the sales do numbies.
Yep.
Do you want to do Champions Dinner, or are we gonna?
Yeah, I'll give an answer. Yeah, so I guess for like an appetizer, and I kind of go more toward, I'm not, you know, the big, you know, fancy type guy, you know, like what, like, you know, John Rahm, what was his? He had the, yeah. I'm just kind of looking at, John Rahm's. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like Iberian ham and, you know, and like bass crab salad. I mean, that's a little too highbrow for me. I kind of more, I'm on the side of, you know, what Scotty had last time with like cheeseburger sliders. And then when Tiger first won he won in 97, so for his 98, it was like cheeseburgers, fries, and milkshakes. I'm kind of more, not quite to that level, but more leaning to that. But I would go like with cheese sticks as an appetizer, and then like fried catfish and French fries as one of the, or I guess, main course. And then maybe have like, you know, mashed potatoes and rice and gravy or something in there, and then with a dessert of a bread pudding. So what about you guys?
Well, I'm going to go the opposite end of the spectrum there, and say that if I were to win the Masters, I'm going to try to go all out for the Champions Dinner. So, I think I'm going.
You got to put the bill, by the way, Fitz. Keep that in mind.
Oh well, I'll save some of the purse for the dinner. So, I know a lot of guys like to kind of pay tribute to their home. I'm not going to do that in this scenario. I think I'm going to go like classic Manhattan steakhouse, you know, early 1900s. So maybe like a wedge salad to start, oysters. Let's do a strip, medium rare strip, fish, I guess, need to be an option for inclusivity purposes. What else? You know, like a cream spinach, asparagus, au gratin potatoes, sides, and then finish it up with a nice New York cheesecake and maybe a nice Cabernet pairing there.
Here you go. I will take the opposite side of your coin and pay homage. I was going to reference that to my host. I remember Spieth, I think, did like Texas barbecue galore the year he won. I think I may go full curveball and go buffet style and make it look like a movie star with a little more Mississippi to it. With, I don't know, like hush puppies and etouffee. The appetizers, and you're, like you said, Patrick, you took a lot of mine, catfish and crawfish somewhere in there for the mains, and bread pudding's my favorite dessert as well, so I'd try to throw some Mississippi in there, but that would require me to hit a wet shot within five yards of the pin, which I'm incapable of doing.
All right, let's head over. Just say, go ahead. I was just going to say I wouldn't skip any three of those dinner options, so.
Absolutely not. All those sound great. Now I'm hungry. all right. On not too many on the app. Must have been a rough week for our followers. Wonder why. first question is from John Patrick. He says, how many games at the end of the season will fall under the snatch defeat from the jaws of victory column? And he adds on to say he can think of six so far. Says Dakota Johnson. I imagine that means Dakota Jordan from State. the Nichols game and Biloxi, Monastir drop fly ball, Tuna's sniper in the outfield against Troy, UL midweek game, and the Sun South game. Do any others come to mind for y'all?
What game? You meant? You say UL? You mean Sela? Or did he say UL on there? You got mixed up.
I may have said UL. Yeah, Southeastern. Sorry.
Okay. Right. I guess, you know, there's always. I might have to look at the record in one run of games, but yeah. I mean, it feels like in years past. You know, this is kind of purely anecdotal, but you kind of had the Barry teams kind of a lot of teams, you know, found crazy ways to win games and would win, you know, really gutty games. And I guess so far you only kind of have, I guess, the South win on Friday and then the Marshall win on Saturday. So, you know, we'll see if, you know, the team can, you know, kind of claw out some of those games that, you know, you've seen them do in years past down the stretch.
Yeah, you always hope
that. Sorry, go ahead, Fitz.
I was just gonna say, you always hope in those type of games that the ball bounces your way, right? And you know, you end up being the lucky one. And it seems like a few of those have gone the other direction. But hey, got a lot of games left to play.
Yeah, I just saw this. He actually replied to that question and said, as of last season, I counted five. And he said he lists them. He says Dakota Johnson. Okay, it is Dakota Jordan because he says in Pearl. So Mississippi State, the one run loss to Texas State in game two. I remember that one being crazy. Middleton giving up a three-run home run in game two of the Georgia Southern doubleheader, blowing a fifth-inning lead against Ole Miss and Pearl. Walked off in 10 in the second game at a doubleheader at Troy, and then a one-run loss in that 9 a.m. game against Old Dominion. I believe that was Easter weekend. So already one more than he counted from his full season total last year. I'll add one game that comes to mind. I guess we never had the lead, but as far as the hits never translating to runs, that Sunday Marist game seemed like we had guys on every inning and just couldn't touch home plate. But yeah, hope that if we've already passed our season total from last year, I hope we don't have any more this year.
But yeah, I mean, typically, you know, over a 56 game season, you know, you'll play however many number one run games, and you know, you hope those are even out. I mean, it's just like in football, like a one score game, those will typically be 500 over time. But you know, sometimes, you know, you'll have a year like the Vikings had in 2022 where they went like 7-1 or 8-1 score games, and then the next year was like the exact opposite. But I think over baseball season, I mean, if you play like, you know, 10 one-run games, you know, you expect to go 5-5. But some years, you know, you might go 7-3, but then the next year you go 3-7. So, you know, I feel like there's probably a lot of games that each team has that, you know, they probably won, they shouldn't have won, or that they shouldn't have won, but they did win. So,
yeah, that goes back to that. It may have been him that had the stat, the question about most important stats, one-run games. If you could lead America in that stat, you'd be doing a lot of good things in college baseball.
Yeah.
Next question is from Mustard Buzzard Bleacher Creature. I'll give a shout out to Mustard Buzzard Bleacher Creature. He went back and watched the film of all three games.
Yeah, I saw that
last night to see if we were tipping pitches or if they were, if there was a trend on the pitch we threw. And anybody that had to suffer through that a second time earns a follow from me. So we have the nice follow back cadence on social media this morning. So shout out to Mustard Buzzard. They say, how concerned are we that our pitching is scouted and figured out after this weekend, or do you think it was a fluke?
Well, Fitz, go on.
I'll say this. Or, yeah, go ahead, Fitz.
I don't want to touch that.
I'll say one thing that I guess hadn't been said on this episode yet, and that when those wind gusts are blowing out, they're also blowing at the pitcher, and I was never – a pitcher. I played a position in high school, but I can imagine on a mound with the wind blowing that far into your face, feels a lot like driving into the wind on a long par five. It's tougher to control the ball, tougher to feel like you're throwing hard, easier to lead the ball up. So that is a factor. That those sheer amount of wind gusts, I guess it was 30 miles an hour, 35 gusts on Friday, 20 something on Saturday, a little lesser on Sunday, it looked like, or at least from the Apple app, I wasn't there. But that alone can eat at your mentality a lot on the mound. But as for if we've been scouted or tipped or hacked into our pitch comp, I leave no comment there either.
I mean, I feel like it was kind of like the same thing with ODU in 2022 where people were like, oh, it's the bats. I mean, I don't like that because I feel like that's what people say when you lose the game. You feel like you're not supposed to lose because I feel like in years past, like Ole Miss and State fans have said that about us. Like in 2018, I remember State fans were like, well, USM is stealing our signs from the video camera. I remember one of them said that on like Elite Dogs after that 2018 weekend series. Then I remember in 2021 after that Sunday game, there's some Ole Miss fan on Twitter was like, yeah, USM, they're stealing our signs. So I feel like it's kind of sound like saying that, like whenever you lose to teams you feel like you're not supposed to be losing to, you say those things where, oh, they're stealing signs, that they have hot bats. So I mean, who knows what, you know, maybe there was something going on. I'm going to say that there wasn't. But, you know, and even go back to like 2022 in UAB, I remember I forgot about that until somebody was bringing it up on one of the message boards. But they were just saying that that was kind of a thing that was going around, that the staff kind of thought that UAB was taking signs those first 2 days, and UAB won those first two games that of that series. So I don't know. I mean, it's up to USM to not tip pitches, and yeah. So.
Oh, next question. Just I would assume this is a personal one to Patrick from Brick. He says, "Well, I see you at the Teague this weekend. Saw you there in 22, and it was like meeting a celebrity."
Oh, well.
Not this weekend, a couple weekends, I guess.
Yeah, next weekend. Yeah, well, don't pump me up too much. But yeah, I do remember running into Brick at that Saturday. I think it was a Saturday game against ULL. But yeah, I'll be there at least Saturday and Sunday, hopefully Friday as well. And then, I said it a couple weeks ago, but I'm making that a whole like Gulf South weekend. So I'm going to the USMC or USM ULL series. And then that Sunday night, the Stones are at NRG Stadium. I'm going to drive over there after the game on Sunday and go watch them. So I don't know. I mean, you know, it's not like seeing them like they were in the 60s or 70s, but that is kind of a bucket list thing. They were at the Superdome in 2019. Didn't go, and I kind of kicked myself about it. So going to that after on Sunday. But, yeah, I will be in Lafayette for at least two games, hopefully three, if I can make that work on Friday.
Yeah, awesome. Any general music advice there I could give to anybody is don't skip the band when you have the chance. I missed a chance to see Van Halen, and then Eddie passed away, and then skipped the chance to see Rush, and then Neil Peart passed away. So two pretty disappointing situations that I missed. So don't ever miss when you can go see your favorite bands.
Where was Rush playing or going to play?
Well, they played in New Orleans, I think, the last time I had the chance, or maybe it was Atlanta, and I had a buddy of mine that was going, and I just, I came up with some excuse. I'm sure dealt with money, but should have just stuck it out and went, and, you know, now I don't have that opportunity anymore, so.
Wow.
But not to get sad on everyone. I will say, looking forward, not to move on, is that all the questions?
We got one more.
Go ahead.
But yeah, it's just from the Kappa Sigma chapter at Southern Miss, and none of us were Kappa Sigmas at Southern Miss, so this isn't Homerism here. So I'm all for some Greek unity. And they say, "We're going to be okay, right?" And then in caps, "Right."
If we go 4-0 this weekend, I'll be at least, I won't be, you know, completely back on board, but I'll be like, okay, that's, you did the bare minimum there. So yeah, let's get a 4-0 weekend, and I'll be kind of toward the affirmative on that.
Agreed. Definitely can't answer yes right now. But Fitz, what were you excited about?
It's just going to be a good weekend in Hattiesburg. I know the historic Hattiesburg neighborhood association's having their downtown crawfish jam on Saturday, which is like one of my favorite Hattiesburg events of the year. So I hope to see some folks there. And then, you know, obviously the baseball game. So looking forward to seeing everybody this weekend.
Yeah, it's been since last June. So you can do the math on what series I was at since I've been able to see some baseball at the Pete. I can't wait.
Yeah,
well, having learned that, it might behoove us for you to skip the games.
We went to it. We went 2 or 3 games earlier this year with me and the crowd.
Okay.
Yeah, as long as ULM doesn't have Chase Burns or Chase Dolander or Blake Burke, I think should be okay. But you know, can't take them totally for granted. But yeah, I guess it's been a couple weeks now that USM's been on the road, so kind of a, I guess you did have the midweek game, but sort of a extended road swing. So yeah, I think it'll be good to be back at Pete Taylor Park. Yeah, so Billy Wiles, just kind of closing out on some football. Billy Wiles announced that he was going to, or it was, I don't know if he announced it, but it was broken on social media Friday afternoon around lunch that Billy Wiles was going to enter the portal as a grad transfer. So yeah, I mean, I think that was something that everybody kind of saw as a possibility. But yeah, I mean, it really is a 3-man battle there at quarterback between Crawford, Rodemaker, and White. So again, that's, you know, kind of the nature of the portal these days. If you know, you want to go somewhere where you can play, it didn't look like Wiles going to play here, so he's going to use his remaining eligibility somewhere else. So you know, wish him luck. But yeah, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, wish Billy the best. Seemed like a good guy that all his teammates liked last year. But I agree, it seemed like the writing's on the wall. He wasn't going to be high in the pecking order next year, and hope he can find somewhere he can play, and hope we can use his scholarship to find an impact piece for our roster coming into the fall, I guess.
Yeah, and an encouraging piece of that is, you know, with him being, playing so much last year, if it was looking like he was falling, you know, far enough down the depth chart where he needed to find somewhere else to play, that might mean that we have a good quarterback situation on our hands moving into the fall.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, Or go ahead, Brent.
And Sam Sklar mentioned today on Eagle Hour that he kind of noticed the last few days of practice that whenever he was asked about the quarterback play, that he would just talk about Crawford, Rodemaker, and White. So that writing may have been on the wall. And I mean, I think if you asked a bunch of Southern Miss fans, pick a poll on who you thought that, hey, one of the four is going to transfer out, after reading kind of the reports, watching the spring game, that would have probably been the most popular guess. But wish Billy the best.
Yep. So that will do it for us this week. Hopefully you get some basketball transfer news this week. I know they've been having some visits of a couple guys. So as soon as we get some news on basketball stuff, we'll talk about that. Anything, I guess, on football, maybe possibly, you know, you get the spring window. So maybe you see some additions or some subtractions as well. We'll talk about that whenever that, or if that happens. So, but this has been Buzzardry, and we will be back next Monday. We thank you guys for listening.